We're holding on steadfast on the Aleph, the seventh line. We learned yesterday that there were two, that we had a machlokas Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda when it came to the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash. Were they measured in amos of 5 tefachim or 6 tefachim? Rav Meir had said they were measured in amos of 6 tefachim. We went through the discussion yesterday. There are parts of the Mizbeach HaChitzen that are measured in amos of 5, and we worked out exactly which ones. And the question now is, what about, and the question was about the kelim. So in that connection, Rav Meir had used the expression that for the kelim they used amos beninius, medium-sized amos. So what does that mean exactly? We have the 5 tefach amah, we have the 6 tefach amah. What is there larger than that? That the 6 tefach one is called beninius. So the kama amah beninius, so how much is an amah beninius? Amar Rabbi Yechon and Shisha Tefachim. So Rabbi Yechon said, well, first of all, what is an amah beninius? That Rabbi Meir had said means Rabbi Yechon says 6 tefachim. Yeah, that fits with what we said in the Mishnah. That a mayor had said the shulchan, the table, the top of the shulchan was 12 by 6. Given that the Torah tells us it was 2 by 1 amos, then that would work only if an amma is 6. And then for a mayor to say 12 by 6 tefachim would only work if, according to him, an amma is 6 tefachim. Well, the Gemara says, "Makal dehavi amah in a fisher mino." Well, that seems to imply that there's an even larger amah, because if you're saying amah beninus, that implies there's a larger one. What larger amah than 6 tefachim is there? That means there's ain. In fact, there is. The hot man, namely, we learn in a Mishnah in Kalim. Stay amas hoyu b'shushan abira. There were 2 amah measuring sticks in Shushan Abira. We're going to explain soon what Shushan Abira, why it was called that, but it was a room above the eastern gate. Rashi says it was the eastern gate of the Azara. Although there are Mephoshim who asked on that, from the Mishnah in Midas actually says that it was the eastern gate of the Harabais. Be that as it may, there was a room there above the gate called Shushan Abira for reasons that we'll explain soon, and in it were located two measuring sticks. Achas Akein Mizrachis Tzfonis for Achas Akein Mizrachis Dremis. One was located at the northeastern corner, and the other one at the southeastern corner. Shalkeren Mizrachis Tzfonis, the one in the northeastern corner, Yisera Al Shomosha Chatzi Etzba. It was a half an etzba larger than the one of Moshe. The one of Moshe, what we mean is, in other words, the one that was set up for us Jewish people by Moshe when the Torah was given. As soon as the Torah was given, after all, we need to know the measurements of things for various purposes in halacha. So Moshe established at that time an amma for the Jewish people. And that's called amma shel Moshe. So now they had one of these measuring sticks was a half etzba longer than that. There are 4 etzbois in a tefach, and we said there were 6 tefachim in an amma, so it comes out there were 24 etzbois in an amma, so this first one was 1/48 longer than a regular amma. A full-size amma of 6 tefachim, you have, of course, the different opinion, famous opinions of the poskim on the subject. Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noam makes it to be a little under 19 inches. The Chazon Ish makes it closer to 24 inches. So that would mean, in other words, so here we're saying 1/48 extra. So according to Rabbi Avraham Chaim, it would be approximately another third of an inch or so. And according to the Chazon Ish, approximately another half an inch. Which we'll see in a second what that was for. The one in the southeastern corner, was another half an etzba larger than that. So it comes out that it was a full etzba larger than Moshe's. So in other words, you have, there's the standard amma, which is 24 etzvos. Then you have these 2 measuring sticks, one of them measured 24 and a half etzvos, and the other one 25. The Loma Omru Achas Gdolav Achas Tana. So what do they say? Why do they make these extra ones? Why not just have measuring sticks of an actual amma? So the reason is Kadeshi Yehu Ha'umnin Notan B'Tanah Machzirin B'Gdola. So that when craftsmen are doing work for the Beis Hamikdash on contract, they will be taking with the small one and giving back with the big one. Meaning they would contract with a gizbar, for example, with one of the treasurers of the Beis Hamikdash, and they would work out the exact the size of the thing that they're going to be making and then preparing the materials for it. So they would arrange with the gizbar. Let's say, for example, I'm going to make you something that is going to be an amma in size, and then the amma that they would use would be one of these two that they would use for the actual finished product would be one of these 2 larger ammas. Which one is which? We'll see in a second. So in other words, and they would figure it out in advance. In other words, if they have, let's say we talked about yesterday, the Mizbeach is 32 amos. So let's say the contractors who are building the Mizbeach, they would figure out, well, 32 amos in amos, in regular amos of 6 tefachim, how much does that equal with one or the other of these larger measuring sticks? And they would figure accordingly. It would come to 30 and change or 31 and change, whatever it would be. And then they would be paid. Let's say, for example, they would be paid on the basis of having done, let's say, 30 amos, when really they would build 32. Now, why is that? Kadesh lo yavayli de me'ila, so that they don't come to me'ila. So in other words, what's going to happen if they say, for example, 32 amos, and they're going to be paid for 32 amos, they're going to be paid for the materials that they laid out. What if they accidentally use a little bit? What if they make it a little bit smaller? Then it's going to come out that they've misused property of Hekdesh, because it's going to come out that they were supposed to build 32, let's say, and they built 31 and a fraction. And then it's going to come out that they're taking money from Hekdesh that they shouldn't have. Tosfos points out that, strictly speaking, it wouldn't be Ne'ilah, because after all, the din is that Hekdesh b'dieved, you could redeem it even for a shofar prota, even if it's worth a lot more. But it means, in other words, they didn't want to have hana, they didn't want to have inappropriate hana from Hekdesh. So we don't want, in other words, that they're going to be arranging that they're going to build, let's say, a 32 amma long thing. And then they're going to end up making it slightly less than 32, and it's going to come out then that they've used, that they've been paid more from Hekdesh than they were supposed to. So because of that is why they have these larger than usual measuring sticks, a half etzba more and another, and a half etzba more than a regular one, and an etzba more than a regular one. Okay, I think most is the Tauti Lomali, so why do they have two? And the answer is Chodel, a kasba v'dava, v'chodel v'nyonel. One was used for gold and silver work. So let's say, for example, they're contracting that they're going to make for the Beis Hamikdash a keli which is supposed to be an amma in length and plated with gold. Let's say for example, the Beis Hamikdash needs a new shulchan. So you have the shulchan, as we said, was 2 amas long. Let's go for the moment with Rav Meir's opinion that the amas of the shulchan was 6 tefachim, means 12 tefachim. So therefore, let's say, for example, okay, the shulchan is wood and gold, maybe that would be different. Let's say, for example, they're making a keli of all gold, which is going to be 1 amma in length. So what they would do is they would prearrange as follows. The amma that they're going to use for the finished product is going to be the smaller of these two that we said is a half etzba longer than the regular one. So they would calculate then, they would say, well, if we need the finished product to be exactly an amma in length, then it means that we're going to be delivering using the larger than normal measuring stick. So therefore, it means, in other words, the contract is going to be written that we're not making the thing a full amma in length. We're making the thing 0.96 of an amma or whatever the figure would be. So that when we add in that extra half etzba, then we have the full amma. And then they're being paid as though it was 0.96 amma, but they're delivering something which is an amma. The point is, in other words, gold and silver is very expensive. You don't want to make them have to lose a lot of their profit by saying that it would be even less. So therefore they allow them that. They're going to use an amma of only a half extra, and in that way, so they're delivering the finished product, but then there's no problem with me'ila, as we just said. But this way, they're being paid almost 100% of what they should for this kind of work and for this amount of gold that they would be using and so forth, as opposed to the chodel binyana, the other one would be for building, where the building materials are not so expensive, so therefore there we can have them use the one with the extra amma measurement attached to it, and then the same kind of thing, it would come out, in other words, then, so we're saying that amma is 1/24 longer, so sorry, okay, then to put it in terms of percentages, then it would mean with the gold and silver, they'd be using an amma, which is, they'd be using figure for their contract, which is 98% of the real thing, approximately 2% less. 1/48 is approximately 2% of less than what it would be. And for buildings, it would be 1/24, or about 4% less. So 96% versus 98. The Rambam actually seems to have a different understanding. The Rambam seems to understand that for buildings, what they would do is they would actually contract using the one made of 20 etzba, it's the one that's 5 tefachim, like we talked about yesterday, and then they would deliver it built with 6 tefachim. So according to him, it's a difference
So, of course, again, it's a difference of 1/6. But for gold and silver, they would use much less of a difference because it's expensive materials, and you don't want to call you. You do want to avoid me'ila, but they. On the other hand, you don't want to deprive them of too much of their profits. Okay, so the point is, in other words, we see from that there are in fact amos larger than six tefachim by a half etzba or an etzba, and therefore the mayor can call the six tefach ama, he can call it an ama benis. Yes. Okay. So we said that these two measuring sticks were located in Shushan Habira. So let's talk about what that is. Tnanha. So we learned in the Mishnah in Masechta Midos, Shara Mizrach, the eastern gate. Now Rashi over here on Al Gemara says that we mean the eastern gate of the Azara, but a number of Mephoshim asked on him that from the Mishnah in Midos, it comes out very clearly that we're talking about the eastern gate of the Har HaBayis. Anyway, the Mishnah says, all of Shushan Habira Tzura, there was an image of Shushan Habira on that gate, painted or engraved or whatever it was on that gate. And therefore, so we said that now there was a room over there where they kept these measuring sticks, and that was also called Shushan Habira. My timer, why they draw a picture of Shushan over there? Rav Chista and Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdini. Between Rav Chista and Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdini, one of them says the reason is Kadesh Yedu Meheichan Bal, so that they should know whenever they look at the picture and remember from where they came to Yerushalayim. So this way, they'll be grateful to the Persian kings who allowed them to rebuild the second Beis Hamikdash. So in other words, according to the way Rashi is saying it, the point is that they would give thanks to the kings who took them out of there. So it might mean that the Persians demanded that it should be put over there. It might be Rabbeinu Gershom says differently, that the Jewish people themselves put it over there, that they should have an eternal remembrance that Hashem took us out of that Golos and brought us to build the second Beis Hamikdash. Sharp points out, it's almost like Zeichu Yitzias Mitzrayim. So that's one reason. The other one says Kadesh Tehei Emas Malchus Aleihem, so that they would have fear of the government on them. They'd be afraid to rebel against the government, remembering that they're subservient. Now, in the event, the Persians only ruled for 34 years after the second Beis Hamikdash was built. After that, they were overthrown by Alexander the Great, and then the Greek period in Jewish history began. Nevertheless, though, they still kept that drawing or carving or whatever it was there. Okay. When we say the two measuring sticks, by the way, Tosfos points out that the one was in the northeastern corner and the other in the southeastern corner, and we said one of them was used for gold and silver work and the other one for building. Tosfos points out the one that was in the northeastern corner would be the one they used for gold and silver, as you find the pasuk that refers to gold coming from the north. So in token of that, they would keep that one in the north. Okay. Speaking of Amos Malchus, speaking of fear and respect for the government, so the Gemara says, Omar Abdani, La'olam Tehei Emas Malchus Alacha. You should always have fear of the government, respect for the government on you, and not to think to rebel against them, and also to speak to them respectfully. Shenemar, as we find that Moshe says to Paray, the Yodu Cholavadecha Eila Eila. He tells him when he's telling him about Makas Bechoris, that all of these servants, all these ministers of yours are going to come down to me, the Ishtach Vulil, and they're going to bow to me, Lamer, and they're going to be saying, get out of here. It's a, please leave Mitzrayim before more of us die. Now, the fact is, it wasn't just the ministers came, Paray himself, Paray in pajamas in the middle of the night, the Ilu Lijidela Karmale, and yet he didn't explicitly say to Paray, you yourself are going to come. So we see that he was doing that because of covering for the king. So we see the concept of Amos Malchus. We did learn in Zvachim actually a different opinion that Moshe on the contrary treated Paray disrespectfully. The Pasuk says over there they left Paray Bochari off angry because Paray had threatened him, and there's an opinion in the Gemara over there that he actually slapped Paray before he left. But here the Gemara is just saying the fact that he mentioned only the ministers coming shows a certain respect for the king, even though Paray is Paray the Rosha, nevertheless. Rabbi Yechon says I have a different source for it. Shenema, we find after the story of Eliyahu Bar HaKarmel, the Yad Hashem Hoisa of Eliyahu, the hand of Hashem was on Eliyahu, meaning Hashem gave him super strength. By Shanis Masnav, he hitched up his belt around his waist so that his flowing clothes don't get in the way of running fast. By Yorach Lifnei Achav Ad Baruch Yisraela, and he ran before Achav's chariot, because in those times you would have, when a king is riding in his chariot, you would have people people running in front of him. Now everybody else, as the Pesukim describe over there, was starting to rain, so everybody was everybody had left. But Eliyahu personally girded up his loins and went and ran in front of Ahab Ad Barach Yisraela until they came to Yisrael, where Ahab had one of his palaces. The point is, in other words, that we see that Eliyahu himself ran in front of, it wouldn't be respectful to leave Ahav to travel by himself. So therefore, Eliyahu showed him covered by running in front of him. Okay, you could say over there that Ahav had already done a shtickel tshuva because he had allowed the Nevi Baal to be killed by Eliyahu, and he's a Melech Yisrael. That doesn't so much show about a Melech Olmos Ha'olam. So therefore, it's actually the Sfasana says you really need both. From the story with Eliyahu and Ahav, you see you have to show covered, and then you have to show Melech Yisrael. From Moshe and Pari, you see it also applies to Goyish kings. Okay. Next. So now, having mentioned a machlokas of Chista and of Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, the Gemara mentions another machlokas between them on the meaning of a pasuk. The pesukim Yechezkel describes in his vision of La'asid Lava, he describes a stream that comes out of Beis Hamikdash and flows and eventually splits up and flows in different directions, and the water of it, the pure water of it that's coming from the Kodesh HaKadoshim of the Beis Hamikdash, cures all the undrinkable waters in the womb, all the undrinkable waters in the world. So, for example, one branch of it goes to the Dead Sea and sweetens it, another one goes to the Mediterranean, etc. And the pasuk describes that alongside the stream, there are going to be trees growing, where these trees are also going to have special properties. And the pasuk says that even the leaves of them are going to be something special. For Allahu l'srufa, the leaves of them will be used for healing. So now, this word l'srufa is a little unusual. If it just meant for healing, then the word would be l'rufua, or something like that. So instead, Rav Chista and Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, they also argue, what does the meaning of l'srufa mean in this context? Chad Omer, one of them says, l'chater pesh l'mayla. Each of them is taking the word l'srufa as meaning to open up the mouth. It's a short for l'chater pesh. So one of them says, l'chater pesh l'mayla, it will open up the upper mouth. In other words, you have people who are mute and unable to speak, they will eat from these leaves of these trees, and that will cure them. The Chad Omer, the other one says, L'hatir pesh l'mata, it will open up the lower mouth. In other words, you have men and women who are infertile, so now it will be able to, in particular women, so now it will open up that lower mouth, and now they'll be able to have children where before they weren't. So in other words, this stream again that's coming out from the place of ultimate kedusha, this has not only ruchniistic effects on the world, but even gashniistic effects on people's mouths and on their ability to have children. So Itzmar, they said in the Beis Medrash more different opinions about that. Chizkiyahu Amar L'hatir Peh Ilmim, or not different opinions, but basically saying the same thing in different words. Chizkiyahu Amar L'hatir Peh Ilmim, Chizkiyahu says that it will be to open up the mouths of the mute. So like the first opinion above, Bakapara Amar L'hatir Peh Karas, and Bakapara says it will be to open up the mouths of the barren, meaning in other words that they'll be able to have children. So all of that we're learning from the word l'srufa. Okay. Getting back now to the lachem aponim. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa. So let's talk about how the lachem aponim was arranged on the shulchan. Now the pasuk says like this: you take the flour, you make it into 12 challos, and the pasuk says v'samta oisam. The pasuk says you should place them shtayim ma'arochas, sheisha ma'arochas, in two stacks with six loaves in each stack. So why did the Torah phrase it that way? If the Torah had only said that you should take flour and make it into 12 challos and place them in two stacks, the Lord Nemah Sheish, if it hadn't said there were six challos per stack, how you see Omer, then you would have said, it doesn't mean there has to be six in each stack. Achas shal arba v'achas shal shmoina. You could have, for example, one stack could be four challos and the other one could be eight. So we wouldn't know that it has to be six and six. L'chach nemar sheish, therefore the pasuk specifically says six in each stack. But if the Torah only told us two stacks with six in each stack, but the Torah had not to begin with said 12 challahs, then you would understand what it means is sholosh shel sheish sheish. Maybe there were three stacks of sin. Maybe there were three stacks of six each. It's not limited to 12 after all. So maybe it means each stack should be six, but we don't know that dafka there have to be two stacks and no more. And Rashi also brings a girsa. That's in the same Gemara. It says I would have said sholosh al sholosh, three by three. So Rashi explains what that means. If it only said shtayim arachos sheish, then it would mean two. Then it would mean two stacks of three of three loaves each. Or maybe it could mean you would have two stacks of six each. But if you want to add a third stack, then you could do that as well. Different Mefarshim talk about different other possibilities of what Rashi means exactly. Be that as it may, the point is, in other words, you wouldn't know that a tafka has to be two stacks of six each, no more, no less. So therefore, the pasuk says 12 phallus to tell you there are no more than 12 phallus. So therefore it has to be no more than 12 phallus and no more than two stacks and no less than six in each stack. But if it only said 12 chalas and it said in stacks, it didn't say two stacks. Then you would think it could be three stacks of four each. We would have said that it means, in other words, that one way of understanding. We would have said ma'arochas means two, and then when it says ma'areches again would be one more. So in any case, the Torah would have just said that it has to be in stacks, but it could be three stacks of four each, let's say. V'chachnem shtayim v'sheish, therefore the Torah specifically says two and six. Because in other words, to tell us that it must be two stacks, and each stack must have six in them, no more, no less. And another possibility is if the Torah had only said two chalas, six in each stack, if it hadn't used the word two, then it would say something like, fine, you have to have one stack of six. Then you would have a couple more stacks which have less than six in each one. Therefore the Torah spells out and says two and six. So if it hadn't said all three of these parts of the pasuk, the word shtei mesrichalos and the word shtein ma'arachas and the word shesha ma'arachas, we wouldn't learn how exactly it should be. Now that we have all those words, then how does it do? Noting shtein ma'arachas shol sheish sheish, you have two stacks of six chalos each. V'im nosan achas shol arba v'achas shol shmoina, if you were to make one stack of four and the other one of six, one of four and one of eight, lo yotza, then he wouldn't be yotza and it would be no good. Tosfos points out, doesn't dafka have to be that? Any other way where it's not six and six. Now, what about, the Braisa says, what about in shtayim shel sheva sheva? What about if you made two stacks of seven each? He added two more chalas. We don't mean that he took the flour and divided it into a smaller number of chalas. The Torah very clearly says each chalas has to be two asronim. What we mean is he brought an extra four asronim and made an extra two chalas. What would happen then? Rebbe says that's fine. Royina, so Yona, Tilo Eno. We would consider the top one, the seventh one, as if it didn't exist. So therefore it wouldn't pass all the rest of them. Keren Oda argues it would be over on Bal Tosif. Because after all, he's adding to the mitzvah. Other achronim disagree with that and say that maybe not. But in any case, we ignore the seventh one. In other words, Tosfos points out that don't you have a problem though? We said we learned before that the shulchan is only mekadesh up to 12 or 15 tefachim above its surface, as we learned according to the different opinions of Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. And we said that according to one opinion, they put the bazichin, the spoons of Lavona on top of the stack of Lacham Aponim, so then it'll be too high off the Shulchan. So Tosfos says, let's say, for example, you were to take the seventh one and push it down so that's inside the sixth one. So let's say, for example, they were made soft enough and deep enough that you could push the seventh one inside the sixth one, and therefore then that way the Bozichon are not any higher than they should be. I mean, this is all following the possibility that the bezuchin are placed on top of the lachem aponim, if they're placed between them, as we said in the Mishnah, according to Abba Shaul, then there wouldn't be a question in the first place. So therefore, we can do that. So the question is, well, in v'nasata al, don't you have to have, again, that you put the levoina on top of it? Now, the problem is, never mind, now Tosfos is pointing out the problem of the extra height, but the problem is, never mind that. You have a chatzitza over there, because you have the seventh loaf is a chatzitza, between it and the lower loaves. The answer is Amalei Rav Chista or Rav Hamnuna. So Rav Chista answers Rav Hamnuna. Va'amilo Rav Hamnuna or Rav Chista. Others say Rav Hamnuna is the one who answered to Rav Chista. Rebbe v'taimei. Rebbe, in saying that this would work, goes according to his shita. Drama al b'samuf, where, as we said, where he holds, as we said in the Mishnah, that when it says that the Levona is al, is on the lachem aponim, that al doesn't mean on, it means near. So therefore, it's between the two stacks. So therefore, there's no problem. The bozifim, there's no chatzitza, because in any case they're not on top of the lachem aponim, they're next to them, and therefore there's no problem with that. So Abba Shaul learned it from one pasuk, as we're going to see now. Rebbe learns it from a different pasuk. The Tanya, as we learned at Brisa, Rebbe Omer, v'nasata al ha-ma'areches levoina zakko. When the pasuk says you should put on the ma'areches, you should put pure levoina. So the word al, Rebbe said, means besamuch, means near. After Omer al b'samuch, now you're saying that al means next to you, or you know al mamash, maybe it means literally on top. The answer is no. No, because we find a pasuk where Hashem tells Moshe when he's setting up the Mishkan that you should make the, you should have on the oren should be the poroches. Now the poroches is not on the oren; it's next to it, it's hanging by the side of it. So heavy Omer, so you see al b'samuch, so you see the word al is able to mean next to you. So again, in the Mishnah we have the Tanakama, and we have other Tanoim who hold that al means on top of, and has to be on top of the lachem aponim, but Rebbe holds that it doesn't have to be. Tosfos elsewhere explains. This is brought in Sota, so it'll eventually come up in Sota during Dafne Yomi of Sira. But anyway, Tosfos talks about that. First of all, there are even Rebbe may hold that in other places in the Torah, al means on, but here he's saying that practically speaking, if you put it on top of the lachem aponim, it may break it, and it's more becoming to put it near the bread rather than on top of it. And then Tosfos goes into a discussion over there of throughout the Torah, when we have the word al, when does it necessarily mean on, and when does it necessarily mean next to? So Rebbe is saying over here it means next to. But Rebbe would say then that there's no problem having a seventh lachem upon him on top of the sixth, and it wouldn't make them possible, and you don't have to worry about the bozichin. Okay. Next. The Mishnah said, Kol ha-kelim shel mikdash v'chol, we said that all the kelim that were in the Beis Mikdash all stood with their length along the length, with their long dimension along the length of the heichol. So therefore we said when they take the rods off the shulchan and place them next to it, they would place them in the same direction, so that if the shulchan is, if the long dimension of the shulchan is from east to west, then the rods are also lying on the floor, lying in an east-west direction. So now let's talk about the details. Let's talk about the details of that. So the coming up, why don't we learn in a braisa? Kol ha-kelim shel mikdash, all the kelim that were in the Beis Mikdash. So what we mean is as follows. You have, to begin with, there are three kelim. There's the Oren, and there's the Shulchan, and there's the Menorah. There's the Mizbeach HaZahav also, but the Mizbeach HaZahav is square, so you can't really talk about a long dimension and a short dimension. The other ones all are longer in one dimension than the other. So all the kelim in the Mikdash. So we mean those three, but we also mean, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that when Shlomo built the first Beis Mikdash, he also set up 10 more shulchanos and 10 more menorahs. We're going to talk about in the Gemara later exactly how they were laid out. But in any case, so we mean all of them. So all of them, Orka Shabbayis, all of them, the long dimension was along the long dimension of the Heichel. With the exception of the Oren, where the length of it, the long dimension of it, was across the width of the house, of the building. So in other words, the long dimension of it ran from north and south. So and the Braise continues, and that is how the Oren itself lay, and that is how the Badim, the poles of the Oren, which the poles had to be permanently kept with the Oren. And we know we have a mitzvah in the Torah not to remove the Badim from the Oren, so that's also how the Badim were placed. And what is my comma? What does that mean? And that's how the Oren was lying, and that's how its Badim were lying. And the answer is hachakama, what the Braise means to say. Kachoyim munach, that is how the Oren was placed, again, with its long dimension being north to south. Midvadav, kachoyim munachim. And the reason, how do we know that that was the case, is because of the way the Badim were lying. Because the Badim, of course, had to be perpendicular to the Oren, because they had to be used to carry it. So since, as we're going to show now in the Gemara, the Badim, the ends of the Badim stuck out towards the east, towards the entrance of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, therefore, of necessity, the Oren itself, the space between the Badim had to be north to south. And the Gemara is going to point out soon that what it means, we're going to show that the Badim were placed, now you think of that, the Badim could have been placed along the long sides of the Oren, and the space between them would be the dimension of the short side, but the Gemara is going to explain that no, it wasn't like that. The Badim were actually placed along the short sides of the Oren, so that the distance between them is 2.5 amos, which is the length, the longer dimension of the Oren. So therefore, given that the Badim are pointing towards the east, necessarily, therefore, the space between them, the 2.5 amos, which is the length of the Oren, necessarily had to go from north to south. So the Gemara says, "Badim Menalam." Well, where do we know that Badim were along the length of the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash, and that they stuck out towards the east and the west. So the Gemara says, "Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, when they brought the Oren into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, when they dedicated the first Beis Hamikdash, the Pasuk says that the Badim extended and they stuck out and they were visible." From the Kodesh, when you look from the Kodesh to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Pasuk says, V'lo yiroach chutza, they couldn't be seen outside. Well, let's read the whole Pasuk and translate it. Vayarifu abadim, the Pasuk says the Badim were extended. Vayiro roshe abadim in a Kodesh, the tips of the Badim could be seen from the Kodesh, from the Heifel, al pnei advir, at the entrance, at the front of the Dvir, which is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, V'lo yiroach chutza, but they could not be seen outward. Vayushan abayim azan, the Pasuk says they were there until this very day. So what does this mean? When the positive Vayarishu HaBadim, when it says the Badim were extended, so you would think they extended out, but they didn't even touch the Parechas. Tamad Loma Vayero, therefore the positive says they were visible, so therefore you could see them sticking out. Tosfos points out, by the way, that it may have been a nest. If the Oren is located in the middle of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and there were 10 amos on each side of it, because we learn, the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra and in some other places, Mokam Oren Enim in Amidah, that the space that the Oren, the floor space of the Oren, it didn't actually take up floor space, even though the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Beis HaMikdash was 20 by 20 amos, but you couldn't, and the Oren itself was 2.5 by 1.5, but if you measured from the Oren in any direction toward the nearest wall, you would find 10 full amos. So the Oren was there. It was a physical object, but Bederek Ness, it didn't take up space. Now, Tosfos points out then, what are you going to have? The Badim then, in order to reach the Parechas, are going to have to be 10 amos long. That itself is a Ness. And even Tosfos says there is an opinion that the Badim could be moved back and forth. They weren't necessarily fixed in place. They can be moved back and forth as long as they don't go out of the rings of the Oren. Fine, but still, you're not going to have 10 amos of length. So therefore, it must be a nest that they were extended until the point where they reached the Parashas. The Rambam actually says that the Oren was in the west of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so in that case, then all the more so, that it would be, there would be even more of a nest. The Ritzvah, one of the Balei HaTosfos learns that it was actually towards the east. In any case, so the point is then, so we're saying that you would think that the Badim did not even touch the Parashas, maybe they didn't reach that far. Tamad Lema Vayiro, therefore the Pasuk says they were visible. Evayiro, but since the Pasuk is saying that they were visible, Yochum Karin Baparechas Vyotzin, you would think then they're ripping through the Parechas and coming out. Maybe you could actually see the actual ends of the Badim themselves from the Hechel. No, Tamadam, Layiro Afutza. Therefore, the Pasuk says they were not visible outside. Hoketzad, so what does this mean? They're visible, but they're not visible. What does that mean? Built in the parechas. They would press against and they would stick out of the parechas. Now, by the way, in the first Beis Hamikdash, there was actually a wall. There was a wall, an amathik, between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It was called amatraxin. In the middle of it, there were doors. And then also, over the door, there was a curtain. There was a curtain for tznius. To keep people from looking in. So now we're saying, in other words, that there was that there was this parochas. So therefore, the ends of the bottom would be sticking out and visible. You can see protrusions visible when you're looking from outside the parochas. Both in the parochas, they'd be pressing against and then sticking out in the parochas, but not actually sticking all through. The domim can shnei dave isha. They would resemble a woman's two breasts. In other words, the idea is that we get our nourishment of the lakus from there, so therefore Hashem made it happen in that way. Shenemar, as we find a pasuk that compares our relationship in Shir HaShirim, throughout Shir HaShirim, it compares our relationship to Hashem, with Hashem, to husband and wife, and the pasuk is, Sir Hamur Dodili, my beloved is like a bundle of mur, a fragrant spice, Ben Shadayolin, he rests between my breasts. So in other words, the Shekhinah rested between the poles of the Aron, which stuck out partially into the parochas and looked from the outside like the protrusions of a woman's breasts under her blouse. So therefore, so Vayero Habadim, you could see that there were Badim over there because they're sticking out as two bumps. But Vayero Achutzi, you couldn't see the actual Badim themselves because they're behind the parochas. So we see clearly the Badim was sticking out towards the east because the Parochas was east of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Therefore, the Badim were played, so therefore the Badim, the length of the Badim, went from west to east, and therefore necessarily now we're going to show that the Oren itself therefore had to be north to south. So the Gemara says, "Manolim the Badim were posted the Oren Havuyasvi." Well, let's deal with that. How do we know that the Badim were along the width of the Oren? Maybe the length of the badim went along the long sides of the aron, and therefore whatever direction the badim were would also be the direction that the long dimension of the aron is. How do you know? In other words, the aron was 2.5 by 1.5 amos. The assumption is that the 2.5 amos were from north to south, and then the badim were perpendicular, the 90 degrees to them, and ran from east to west. How do you know? Maybe the badim ran along the long sides, and the space between them is the 1.5 amos that are the width of the aron, and then it would mean if the badim themselves are going east to west, then the length of the aron would also be east to west. How do you know that now? So the answer is, Amar of Yehuda, Tre Gavri, Ba'amso Pago, Lemistagi Lahu. The answer is, if you have two people, carrying the Oren on each side, you have four people altogether, two on one side of the Oren and two on the other. Two people would not be able to walk in a space of an amma and a half, because the Gemara explains in other places that the width of a person's body is approximately an amma. So since two Levi'im, two Bnei Kohos, are carrying the Oren on one side and two on the other side, and they would be walking between, they would be walking between the Badim. How we know that? We'll talk about it in a second. So therefore, necessarily, the Badim have to be 2.5 amos apart, and therefore that leaves room for two Levi'im to walk side by side, carrying the Oren. But if you only had a space of an amma and a half, you wouldn't be able to. I'm going to deal with the question, how do we know? So, okay, maybe, who says they were walking on the inside between the badim? Maybe you could say, very simple, each one is carrying a bad on his shoulder. Maybe their bodies are not in front of the oren, and only their shoulder. So in other words, let's say you have the bad, on one side is being carried on one Kohen's left shoulder, and then an amma and a half away you have the other Kohen who's carrying the other Bad on his right shoulder. So maybe you don't have, neither of them are between the Badim. What makes you say that it has to be the other way around, that the two Kohenim are walking in front of the Oren, and one of them the one to the right has the Bad on his right shoulder, and the one to the left has the Bad on his left shoulder? How do you know it's not the other way around? So Achronim deal with Achronim deal with various angles on that. The Malbim has an explanation about it, that basically
And we're going to, the Gemara is going to continue to show how we know there were four Kohanim carrying the Aron, and was in, and he explains, the question is also, how do we know that they had to stand in front of the Aron? Basically, the answer is, if they, it's more respectful that way, that they're both sides, the Levim on both sides have to be facing the Aron, and the only way for them to be, if they're facing the Aron, means that they actually have to have their bodies in front of it, rather than off to the side. So therefore, they have to be walking between the Badim, only then their faces are facing directly towards the Aron, as opposed to if they were any other way. An interesting point that's made in that connection is we know that the Gemara tells us that the Aron would carry its bearers, that even though it seemed the Kohanim are carrying the Aron, really it was the other way around. The Aron would carry its bearers, as famously it did by the splitting of the Yarden, where the Kohanim was stuck on one side of the Yarden, and then the Aron flew them over. It comes up in Sota in another couple of weeks, in Daf Yomi of Sphira. Anyway, so they have to be standing between the Badim because that's the place of the greater Kedusha where such a nest is going to happen. So there are various explanations that Achronim have how we see that necessarily they had to be between the Badim, so the Levi to the right would have the Bad on his right shoulder, and the Levi to the left would have the Bad on his left shoulder. And both pairs of Levim are facing towards the Aron rather than turning their backs to him. So of necessity, they had to have 2.5 amas of space, otherwise there wouldn't be enough room for the people to be able to walk there. Well, the Gemara says, how do we know that there were four Kohanim carrying the Aron? Maybe you only had two, one on each side, and then in that case, maybe there is only an amma and a half between them. The Malbim in that connection brings up, I mean, what's the Gemara's question? A person is an amma, is an approximately an amma wide, not an amma and a half. If the Badim are an amma and a half apart, a person physically wouldn't be able to carry it, wouldn't be able to carry two Badim on his shoulders. But that's the Gemara's asking, how do we know that that's precisely what the Gemara's asking, how do we know that they were walking between the Badim rather than outside them? How do we know, as we were just saying, maybe the Kohen to the right had the Bad on his left shoulder and the Kohen to the left had it on his right shoulder, and they're not walking between the Badim, and the question is, how do we know otherwise? And the answer is dictive, because the pasuk says, "V'nosu ha-kohasim," the kohasim, the bnei kohas, who are carrying the kelim of the mishkan, should travel when they're traveling in the midbar. And now the pasuk says, the words "V'nosu ha-kohasim" means two, tre means two, because "V'nosu" in plural and "kohasim" is plural, so that means two. Noisei HaMikdash, the pasuk continues, those who carry the holy things, also in plural. Nami Trei, that means another two. So it means that altogether you have to have four Levim. And then the Malbim continues the Shitase. He says the point is not just the plural of the word Noisei. Of course, if it began with Nosu, then it would continue with Noisei. But rather, the point is that we're saying the fact that it says HaMikdash, implying they have to carry it in a way showing the Kedusha of the Aron. And that means, in other words, that they have to be walking directly in front of it and not off to the side. So therefore, of necessity, it had to have been that the poles were far enough apart that two Kohanim could walk directly in front of the Aron on one side and directly in front of the Aron on the other side, each one carrying one pole of the Aron on his shoulder. And therefore, that could only work if the long dimension of the Aron was between the poles. So therefore, that leads us to what we said before. The poles themselves went from east to west, and as we said, they stuck out in the parochas towards the east, but that means, therefore, necessarily that the length of the Aron, the 2.5 amas, length of the Aron, had to be between the Badim. The Gemara continues, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in the Braisa, so we said before, all the Kelim, so which other Kelim are we talking about? Asara Shulchanos, also Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech made 10 extra Shulchanos for the Beis HaMikdash. Now, we don't mean, in other words, 10 including the original one for the Mishkan, we mean an extra 10. There's an idea behind, obviously you can't just add things willy-nilly. This is all part of the blueprint that Hashem gave to David, which in turn David handed over to Shlomo for building the Beis HaMikdash. And the idea is in Yalkut Shimoni, it explains that the idea was the Shulchan brings down brachas of Gashmius, of Parnosa, to the Jewish people. There's constantly lechem upon him on it, and therefore Hashem's bracha can rest on it, and from there it goes to the Jewish people. So now the extra 10 Shulchanis would be that there would be much, that Hashem would give much more Parnosa, much more food, especially the Yalkut Shimoni points out in the Midbar, they weren't even plowing and planting, they didn't need such a bracha in the crops. Now that they're in Eretz Yisrael and they have a Beis HaMikdash, then they need a greater bracha in the crops, and therefore he has 10 extra shulchanos to draw down more bracha to the Jewish people. And then it goes on to explain why 5 to the right and 5 to the left, as we're going to go on later. And the same thing with the menorah. There's also a similar idea that the menorah represents the light of Torah, and therefore it represents that they would have the connected the Shivan Umos, that the Shivan Umos, as we know, in Shlomo's times, everybody would be coming to him to hear his Chachma, so therefore that represented that the light of Torah is not just going to remain by us, it's going to spread out to all the Shivan Umos of them. So he made 10 extra Shulchanos, Shneimar, as it says in the pasuk, in Divrei Hayomim, Vayas Shulchanos Asara, he made 10 extra Shulchanos, Vayanach BaHeichel, and he placed these extra Shulchanos in the Heichel, Chamishim Yamin, VaChamishim Ismail, 5 on the right and 5 on the left. Now, what does that mean, right and left? The Imtama Chamishim Yamin HaPesach, VaChamishim Ismail HaPesach, does it mean there were 5 to the right side of the door of the Heichel and 5 to the left? No, that wouldn't work. If you think that's in a Shulchan Badarim, then you're going to come out that a Shulchan is located in the south. And that wouldn't work. Because the Torah clearly says that the Shulchan has to be placed on the left, on the north side, which is the north side. So it'll be the right when it'll be the right when you're first coming into the Heichel. If you're looking at the Heichel from the vantage point of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it'll be to your left. So all the Shulchanos have to be on that side. Ela Shal Moshe Be'emsa. Rather, what it means is Moshe's table was located in the middle. V'chamishim miyimine, v'chamishim ismoile, and 5 to its right and 5 to its left. So we're going to, the Gemara is going to explain later how exactly they were arranged, how exactly they were laid out. Okay, so that's as far as the Shulchan is. Similarly, the Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in another Braisa. Esther Menotis also Shlomo. Shlomo also made 10 Menotis. Again, besides for the original one from Moshe Rabbeinu's times. We learned, interestingly, earlier in the Masechta, we learned about how Shlomo started with 1,000 kicker of gold and then purified it down to get 1 kicker of the most ultra-refined gold, and he did that 10 times to make these 10 menorahs. Shneimar, as the pasuk also says, in Divrei Hayomim, he made 10 menorahs, according to the law, meaning they had to be the same size and the same shape and everything as the original one of the Torah. You know, the actual Lashon HaPasuk is slightly different to Vayasas Menoras Hazohav Eser Kimishbatim. Whatever. Vayitin Vahechon, he placed them in the Hechon, Chamishim Yimin, Chamishim Ismail, Chamishim Yimin, Chamishim Ismail, but how is that in the passage? 5 to the right and 5 to the left. Again, what do we mean to the right and to the left? Vimchem Chamishim Yimin, Apesach, Chamishim Ismail, Apesach. Do we mean 5 to the right side, on the right side of the entrance, and 5 on the left side? No, because the entrance to the Hechon was exactly positioned in the middle, exactly in equal in distance between the north and the south. Im came a finna menorah b'tzof, and then he would have some of the menorah. So in the north, that Torah omer v'sam menorah nochach ha-shulchan, and the Torah clearly says that the menorah has to be opposite the shulchan on the south side of the Mishkan and of the Beis HaMikdash. Ella, so the same thing, Mishal Moshe b'ensa, Moshe's menorah was in the middle, v'chamisha mimin, and 5 of the menorahs were to its right and 5 to its left, as the Gemara is going to explain later on. We'll look at the bottom of this Amud and then in the top of the next one how exactly it was laid out. Okay, the Gemara says Tony Chada. Now we have one brayser that says mechatzi bayis v'lefnim hoyumunochin. All these shulchanos and all these menorahs were all located in the inner half of the heichal. Now the heichal was 40. The heichal in the first Beis HaMikdash was 40 by 20 amos, also in the second Beis HaMikdash. The Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 by 20. So one Braisa says that they were located in the inner half of the building. So the inner half would mean further towards the west. The Tony Chodem is Shlisha Bais for the Fnim Harim Monochin. Another Braisa says they were one third of the way in. So the Gemara says, V'loi Kasha, Mar Kachoshiv, Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim Bahadeh Hechel, or Mar Loi Kachoshiv, Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim Bahadeh Hechel. The one Braisa counts the Kodesh HaKadoshim together with the Heichel. The Heichel is 40 in length. The Kodesh HaKadoshim is 20. So the total length is 60. If we place the Shulchanos If we place the shoulder, if what we do is we leave the first 20 amos of the Heichel empty of any Kalim, then we have in the next 20 amos are all these Shulchanis and all these Menorahs, then it comes out, therefore, so if we look at, if we count the Kodesh HaKadoshim together with the Heichel, so then it means we're saying that you have 20 amos of empty space, then you have 20 amos with these Kalim, and 20 amos of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So altogether it means, in other words, you have one third of the total space is left empty, and then you start having these Kalim. As opposed to the first Braisa that says Mechatzi Bais is not counting the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's focusing only on the Heichel. The Heichel, the Kodesh, was 40 Amos long. If 20 Amos of it are empty and the other 20 Amos are filled with these Kalim, that means that they're all in the inner half of the room. So it depends whether you're talking about the room of the Kodesh by itself or whether we're talking about the total length of the building, the Kodesh plus the Kodesh HaKadoshim. More on the topic of the direction in which the Kalim were placed. Tana Rabbanan, Mizrach Ma'ariv Hoyimunachin. These 11 Shulchanos, Moshe's plus Moshe's original one plus Shlomo's extra 10, they were placed on an east west axis. So they were all so again, each one of them, the long dimension went from east to west. Divrei Rebbe, that's how Rebbe says. Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, Omer Tzofen V'Darim. Rebbe Shimon says they were placed from north to south. So 90 degrees rotated compared to what Rebbe says. Tosfos points out in that case, necessarily, when the Mishnah had said the length of them is along the length of the Heifel, that would have to be like Rebbe. So the Gemara says, my time is the Rebbe. Why does Rebbe say that they were east to west? And the answer is Goma Menorah. He learns it from the Menorah, from the way the Menorah was placed. Ma Menorah, Mizrach Ma'ariv, just like the Menorah, as we'll explain in a second, was placed from east to west. At Haninami Mizrach Ma'ariv, the same way all the other Shulchanos had to also be placed east to west. So the Gemara says, Menorah Gufa Menalang. Well, where do we know the Menorah itself was placed on an east to west axis? So Michtib, Bener Ma'arovi, because the Torah says about the western lamp, which we'll talk in a second, which one that is, the Pasuk says, Yarech Oise Aaron Ugomer, Aaron should prepare it, Lifnei Hashem, before Hashem. So now that implies that Yarech Oise, he should prepare it, which implies we're talking about one particular lamp, and it should be Lifnei Hashem, the Kal Dekulu, Lav Lifnei Hashem, implying that the other ones are not as much Lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem would be as close as possible to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is towards the west. Now, if the menorah was placed on an east-to-west axis, kulanam lifnei Hashem ninu, then all of them would be equally lifnei Hashem, because all of them are exactly the same distance from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So therefore, Rebbe says that implies that it had to have been on an east-to-west axis. What the Ner Ma'arovi is, there's a lot of machlokas according to this opinion, what the Ner Ma'arovi was. One explanation is that it means one explanation is it actually means the one that's furthest to the west. The Rambam seems to understand it that way. The different other opinions, it was actually one of the ones towards the east. It was the second one from the east, and it's called Ner Ma'arovi because it's the first one that is west of something else. The first one, the first one on the end would be, it's not west of anything else, but the second one is already west of the first one. Rashi explains in Shabbos that that's what it means. Here Rashi seems to actually say more like the Rambam that it means the westernmost one. The Ramban in fact says that Rashi is contradicting himself, because apparently Rashi wrote Pirush over here before he wrote the one in Shabbos, and then over there in Shabbos he changed his mind and decided it meant the second one from the end. So in any case, the point is that you can only say Lifnei Hashem if some of them are closer to the Kodesh HaKadoshim than others. But Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon, my time. Meanwhile, why does Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon say differently? And the answer is Goma Me'oren. He learns it from the Oren. Ma Oren Sofen V'Dorim. Just like the Oren was placed on a north to south axis, like we said before. Achaninami Tzofen V'Dorim. The same way the Shulchanos had to also be Tzofen V'Dorim. He says that whatever applied to one automatically applied to the other. The question is, the Rebbe Nami Ligma Me'oren. Well, why doesn't Rebbe learn? We all agree, as we said before, that the Oren was placed on a north to south axis. So why doesn't Rebbe learn from that? And the answer is done in futzmi futzmein, done in futzmi pnim. Because Rebbe says we can learn a keli that's located outside in the kodesh, in the heichal, from another one that's located outside there, and done in futzmi pnim. Mim b'pnim, you can't learn from something from the oren, which was located inside the kodesh HaKadosh, and that has different rules. Well, okay, Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, Ligma Meminoira. Why doesn't Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon learn from the Meminoira? And say that the menorah was east to west, and therefore the other kelim should be east to west too. The answer is Amalach. Rabbi Elazar says to you, menorah gufet sof in the darim have a mancha. Because in fact, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says the menorah itself was placed north to south. Ela haksiv yarach oisa aron avonah. What about the pasuk that implies that there's one of them which is lifnei Hashem? So Rebbe is saying lifnei Hashem means there's one of them that's closer to Hashem, closer to the Kodesh HaKadoshim than others. But if you say it's east, if you say it's north to south, all of them are the same distance. What's lifnei Hashem? And the answer is the matzid luhuatz durbis. It means that they were inclined. The middle lamp of the menorah would be inclined, that the cup of it would be tilted so that it faces towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The other ones, Rashi points out, would all face that one. So all the other ones would be inclined, so they face towards the middle one, and the middle one would be facing towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, the pasuk says, "Amu pnei menorah yirushivas haneiros." The seven lamps should light towards the face of the menorah. Melamed shalim mitzadim pneihem klapi neirhem. Sorry, that teaches us that they would incline the other cups of the menorah towards the middle cup. So Rashi on the pasuk explains this way. It represents that Hashem doesn't need our light, so like all of them are just facing towards the middle one rather than facing outwards to shed as much as possible light. Amr Abnasan, Mikan Hashem, Soy Meshubach. From here we see that the middle one sometimes is considered the most special. That has an implication. It actually points out, as far as it was yesterday, Perakachad of Rambam talked about the number of aliyah 2 days ago, whatever, talked about the number of olim that you need for the Torah. We say you need a minimum of 3 olim and a minimum of 10 psukim. That means at least one of them has to read 4 psukim. And the Gemara points out that doesn't matter whether the first, second, or third ola gets the 4 psukim. Either way, it's fine. And because whether it's the first one is sometimes the most important, whether it's the last one, because sometimes the last one, Achron, Achron, Chavid, or whether it's the middle one, because as you see over here, the middle one is the most important, because we see that according to this opinion, all of them incline towards the middle one. There is a long Rishima from the Rebbe called Rishima Samanurda that in print runs to well over 100 pages. The Rebbe analyzes in great detail everything that we know about the Menorah, about the details of when it was lit and so on and so forth. And in the course of it, the Rebbe discusses this point over here about which direction was the Menorah located. Now in the end, the Rambam actually passed them as kind of a hybrid. The Rambam, the Oren we said clearly is north to south. It's north to south. The Rambam paskins like Rebbe that the Shulchanos, that the Shulchan and all the other Shulchanos were placed east to west. But on the other hand, he says that the Menorah was placed north to south like Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Shimon. Some of Foshim on the Rambam deal with how could he do that. Usually the halacha is like Rebbe against Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Shimon. And one thing they point out is there's a different Gemara where Rebbe Yochanan says something that fits better with Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Shimon's opinion, and therefore that can mean that on a nigludika level that can establish therefore that the halacha is like him in that. So it would come out, in other words, that we don't in the end say that the menorah and the shulchan are the same. The menorah would be north to south, the shulchan would be east to west. And the Rebbe goes on and explains by Arichos about the different aspects of it, and ultimately, why should it be? What does east versus west represent? What does north versus south represent? And why should each of these kelim be in a different axis like that? And the gist of the explanation is that if we look at east versus west, that represents higher levels of Kedusha versus lower. Because after all, like we're saying, the west is towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the east is not. So to say that something is placed east to west implies, in other words, that you're talking about something where there can be a higher level of Kedusha in that aspect of Avodah versus a lower level. As opposed to put it north and south represents, there's no difference, it's always equal, because the north and the south, there's no special greater Kedusha in the north of the Heichal versus the south. So the Rebbe says then that if we say, so basically, in other words, that the Everybody learns the Torah of Hashem. So from the point of view of the Moyach, everybody's the same. We all learn the same Torah. But when it comes to the Lev, when it comes to the heart and the feelings that a person has towards Hashem and towards Torah, then there's going to be differences between people. So therefore, if we say that Rebbe, that the menorah is placed from east to west, then that means the main thing the menorah, which represents the light of Torah, the main thing of it is the excitement and the motivation that a person puts into it. So therefore, you're going to have sometimes different people are on different levels of that. Different types of Jews are on different levels of that. So you have seven lamps of the menorah representing seven basic categories of Jews in that regard. So some of them would be on a higher level, closer to the Kodesh HaKadoshim than others. As opposed to if we say it was placed east and west, then we would say the main thing is the avodah of moyach, the avodah of putting your brain into learning Torah. So fine, different people have different degrees of mental ability, but there's not really one is not greater than the other in that regard. And according to that way of looking at it, also we would say that the you have the main stem of the menorah, and then you have the six branches represent the Shisha, Sidra, and Mishnah. And they all face toward the middle one, representing that all of them are pointing to the MS, to the fundamental MS of Torah. So now the Rebbe goes on to explain then. So the Oren, everybody agrees, is north to south, because the Oren definitely represents learning Torah, and there the main thing is the Moichin that a person puts into it. So Rebbe Elazar ben Rebbe Shimon wants to learn the menorah from that, and Rebbe says that not. Rebbe being a Nasi of the Jewish people, so he's concerned for everybody, so therefore he focuses on Avodas HaLev and the different degrees of Lev that each person puts into their Avodah. Rebbe Elazar ben Rebbe Shimon is one of these really top-level tzaddikim, so for him the main thing is the Avodah of Moyach. And he says even the Shulchan, you would learn from that also the Shulchan goes according to the Moyach and should be north and south representing Moichin, as opposed to Rebbe wants them to be north and south representing the different categories and the different types of Jews of whom he's a Nasi. That's a long, long thing that, as I said, it goes, the whole Rishima goes in print to well over 100 pages, but these are some high points of it, explaining the difference between these different opinions. So in the end, the Rambam Baskins, that the menorah goes north and south, in other words, in effect, he's saying the main thing of the menorah also represents the light of Torah, and the motion that a person puts into Torah, as opposed to the Shulchan, represents more a person's other areas of Avodah, in which there is, in fact, a difference between the different amounts of Lev, the different amounts of heart that a person puts into it, and therefore it goes on the east-west axis, with one part of it being closer to the Kodesh HaKadoshim than the others.